The globalization of markets, as Peter was talking about, has certainly accelerated as we've witnessed a new revolution in technology, especially high technology. And our next speaker is one of its true pioneers. Dan has sketched a picture for us of a unique man, a man of integrity, a man of intellect, a man of vision, a man of enormous accomplishment. Perhaps some of this will come out in the Q&A period. A man of compassion, a man of great humility, as Dan mentioned. In the gift bags that you have, there's also a sheet in there, which is just sort of a snapshot of some of the comments we've gotten from people who couldn't join with us. And I'd just like to read a few of them. Quote, "I'm very sorry that I'm not able to be with you this evening to acknowledge in person the achievements of this very special man, Bob Galvin, a man of superb wisdom, presence, and character, whose words you listen to because they are true. Bob is a class act, and his presence raises the standard for corporate and institutional behavior for the rest of us. We are indeed grateful for all he has done for us and for our country. Thank you, Bob, and congratulations. Robert Eisenstein, President of the Santa Fe Institute." Quote, "I've been a genuine fan of Bob Galvin and his associates in Motorola and his fellow members in the Young Presidents Organization, the Chief Executives Organization, and the Electronic Industries Association. He has combined a lifetime of managerial leadership, technical vision, government counsel, human relations, scholarship, faith-based living, along with being a very strong family man." Unquote, Roland Bixler, President Treasurer, JBT Instruments. Quote, "I consider Bob Galvin a friend and a great businessman and a great person. I've stated publicly in many speeches that Bob is the most visionary business leader I have ever met." Unquote. Thomas Malone, President and CEO, Milliken and Company. In addition to his stunning successes leading Motorola, Bob has served as chairman of the board of trustees of the Illinois Institute of Technology that Dan was referring to, Santa Fe Institute. He was vice chairman of the university's research association. Many of you may have seen the complete bio on our website that we put up and also sent to many people. It's far too long to put on the dinner program. He's a recipient of over 10 honorary degrees. Under his leadership, Motorola was the first company-wide winner of the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award. He's a member of the National Business Hall of Fame. And I should mention that Bob was also a founding member of YPO and CEO. But we honor tonight Bob for most of all because of how he has achieved his success. Through adherence to the highest of principles, dedication to helping others learn the meaning and importance of these ideas, his current work memorializing the origins and findings of the Scottish Enlightenment is reviving interest in a group of pioneering thinkers whose insights are, if anything, even more relevant today than they were when they were first written in the 1770s and afterward. Most recently, as you know, Bob is the author of this book. There's also a copy in your gift bag, entitled America's Founding Secrets on the Scottish Enlightenment. It's not the first book on the subject. It won't be the last. It's not an in-depth scientific or scholarly work. But it's a very important book, because what Bob has done is he's essentially written a book which is sort of like an executive summary for people who are busy. How do you communicate to busy people the key insights of this group of people that have had such a profound influence on life in the United States and worldwide? Few of these people have the time to read Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations or other works. So throughout his career, Bob has exemplified the term, quote, a scholar and a gentleman, end quote. And I'm honored and pleased to present to you Bob Galvin.
I come to events of this nature where there is bound to be stimulation. hoping to be ready to be responsive. Peter has given us, I think, a superb early presentation, which I thrilled to hearing of his entrepreneurial success and his philosophies. Adam Smith would have liked to have heard his speech on globalization. But Peter and I don't see eye to eye on how the world will evolve into the better place that it has to be. So let me give you a contrasting point of view. If you read my book, The America's Founding Secret, How the Scottish Enlightenment Helped Our Founding Fathers, you will catch a hint of what I will now elect to speak of publicly for the first time. The Scots became a superb role model of building nation. The United States is a superb role model of nationhood. There has to be a determination, and there can be a high promise if others of us from this point forward will pick up the cue from the Scots, which I will hint at here in my verbal comments, and which, if you read the book, which is a very easy read and has some substantial facts and factors in it, you will hear, you will see that I have written that there is a chance that if we will copy the modus operandi of the Scots, and with the great strengths that were accorded us as a function of the founding that followed them, that it would be possible to pick two or four nations in need of betterment and make them better as the Scots made themselves better and as we made ourselves better. Let me just pick up a couple of themes from the book and then see if I can make that point, to your levels of interest in the differences between how the two of us look at things. In the 1500s, the people of Scotland were in dire need. They were in need of hope. They were subject to lordly tyranny. And just two or three people in the country, I named them, Hector Boyce, John Boyer, and George Buchanan, said, we've got to change the quality of leadership in our country. The monarchs, the princes, the feudal lords, they're immoral. They're unprincipled. They're totally selfish. We must teach our leaders morals and manners. Imagine that, changing a whole country by just two or three people. And they started that, and over generation after generation after generation after generation, for 250 years, it was as if there was a force field with a unique internal magnetic strength that built more and more people among the learning Scots, not only the literary, who caused that there did accomplish in 1750 the brightest people ever assembled in one place at one time, who were the leading thinkers in all fields of knowledge. They had made Scotland into the superior institution intellectually in the world, which is not known by very many Americans. On other occasions when I've talked to audiences, such as those that Dan spoke of, I've spoken to people at a number of other institutions, I've often asked the question, how many of you knew about the Scottish Enlightenment and what they did to build a nation? And there's only two or three people out of 100 that know about that. But here was a hopeless situation that built the quality of nationhood with all of the fibers of greatness. Now, it so happened that through a variety of processes that, again, are spoken of in the book. It was possible to transfer the wisdom of the Scottish Enlightenment to our founding fathers. How often, maybe you ask the question, as I did as I was a student of American history, how come we were so favored that there did emerge a group of people, just a couple of scores of them, who we call patriots to begin with and founders eventually, who all seemed to just come upon the scene, and they had courage and wisdom. There have to be first causes. What was the root of their wisdom? The root of their wisdom were those who were the Scottish Enlightenment. I'm not going to take an inordinate amount of time here this evening to paint that picture for you, but you know the names of James Watt and Adam Smith. You probably don't know too well about Francis Hutcheson and Hume and Lord Kames, Dougal Stewart, a whole slew of other men. These people had garnered as a collective group were the ultimate generation that had this remarkable wisdom of being the best geologists, the best chemists, the best political thinkers, the best architects and engineers, who built a society that made Scotland a nation to be factored. It lost its independence, but it didn't mean that it hadn't shown the way to nationhood. All that they learned, they imparted to us, and it made possible what my father did in founding our modest company, what Peter has done in the achievements with his, and I know a number of others of you out in this audience who have done similarly. They did it because the principles, the roots, were established in this country. Learning from the Scots. The big lesson of the Scots was the lesson of the role of property, resources, in commercializing societies. That was the pivot point in the history of man when finally a group of wise people said, yes, we've had those who were in agriculture. Now it's time for commerce. And commerce is the basis of building societies. And incidentally, a good part of that commerce today is technology bent. But it was the role of property that they taught to our founding fathers, so that they in turn were the first to establish a country built on commerce, capital, and the creation of wealth through the employment of a subsystem in society called business. Many of you here are a part of that today's society of business. We would never have been the grand society we were if we had not had the roots imparted to us from the Scots, which is detailed in some useful way in this book, and I commend it to you. But we picked it up and carried it farther. We were nothing as a nation. Now, what did the Scots do, and what did we do, that give hope that others can take the essences of our experiences, even the particular lessons from the Scots? And that is that there are things that one does that can make a stale nation into a vital nation. And the first thing is that you have to admit that what you're doing is wrong. There has to be somebody in the society who is willing to call out that challenge. And that cadre will be a minority. It was three in the case of Scotland. It was a couple of scores of patriots in our country. It could be any number in the 50 or 60 countries of the world that have to be brought into the real world so they can be a part of that global society that Peter and Adam Smith have talked about. So my message in relationship to the integration of the synthesizing of the things that can go on directly and subliminally in meetings of this nature is that there are ways of doing things better. The Scots, among other things, had a great ability to work together interdependently and interdisciplinary with regard to their affairs, and that was to have clubs. They had many clubs. The great scholars were members of two or three clubs. They'd meet probably almost once a week at their clubs. A dissertation was be made, a comment of one kind or another. Maybe they were just frolic on that particular meeting. I see the formation among private sector peoples in the current enlightened countries of the world, forming in a fashion like those of us in all manner of seminar class of activities, will be available to help flourish the enlightening that may take place in the next country that is ready to join the real civilized world with a strong commercial base. And yes, even a better legal system and a better governance system. We have to have them all. We have to have success in technology. But Peter, I am of one of my mind that having fostered technology around the world, that it will not be the seed from which all good will come. It's going to have to come from principles, such as our acknowledged in this text. And I hope, as a consequence of the fact that I'm going to pick up on this theme, and I have rewritten the theme now into a form of book. This is really a collection of essays. And I'm going to make a very strong appeal in that book for the fact that the great ultimate heritage of the Scottish Enlightenment having taught Americans how to be Americans is that we can sow the seeds of a commercial civilization, free, enlightened, objective, open-minded, that will do for the next generations over the next 100 or 200 years the emergence of a new class of civilization with all the economic opportunities that go with it. I'm very pleased to have the privilege of being with this august group of leaders and peoples and friends, and I am so pleased to again be associated with the Garvey family, many others of my friends from different institutions from around the country, who are all in very strong support of the thesis that is suggested by just the simple idiom that is pictured behind me. We have a great opportunity to take the next step, as Boyce, Moyer, and the others in Scotland, as our founding fathers did here, and to put in the hands of nations elsewhere the application of the principles that have brought us to the point of the great privileges that we are accorded here this evening. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob.